that paradox gets real confusing. And the bridge for me around it is power. And be it in any scale, that anytime there's this patronizing position whereby somebody looks down on someone and says, I'm trying to help you, I know how to help you, I know better what you need than you do, that my feeling in that is that the answer is, you know, don't you think you don't know half of what's going on with me, and if you did, you wouldn't make it sound so easy, and, you know, whatever, that there has
well,
to be.
Well, that reminds me, and this is, what would be really helpful is for us to hear you talk some more about what's going on, but one thing that I think may put it a little bit in perspective also is, and maybe you've actually seen this with other people, is that when she does, that woman hits bottom, she will have the information you gave her, and it's there for when she's
well,
in that place.
That's the whole point. I mean, that was the whole point of my doing the pamphlet, was that, you know, people who are high are not high 24 hours a day, and they are not, and they their addiction doesn't work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and so the hopes was that if they had the information with them, that at that point, when they wanted it, it would be there, and these places would be available to them. So that was the whole point of doing the pamphlet that way, was to recognize that, and also to recognize that nobody else would do that. I mean, the current system is punitive. You must go on Monday at 9 o'clock, or you must be one of the first 20 at Monday at 9 o'clock. And if you can't make it, I told people to go sleep in the doorway the night before to absolutely ensure they would be one of the first 20. Because if they get high during the night and they fall asleep somewhere else or on the subway train and they don't get it, then they don't get in. I mean, so there is, it's true that the current system is fairly punitive. It doesn't take into account the reality of being an addict. And yes, it's true. I mean, I know that, that information will be used. But it doesn't mean that I don't feel the way I feel about it. And of the other two women who are still addicts, one of them is my age. Hispanic, and she will not go to a program with her man. This is very, very difficult. She absolutely would not go to a program. She wanted to go to a woman-only detox, and she wanted to go to all the women-only support groups, and it was almost impossible to find a support. And now she's dying of AIDS. But she would not go to a program. I have to say I understood this. I really tried to find programs, network out of the city, you know, someplace that would take a crack addicted, HIV positive, minority woman, women all. Well, through a hotline that I work at, we networked into Philadelphia. I mean, there are just places.
There's a place in New York that's all. I think the one place that I know is the Odyssey House, which has a program for women. But is it 20 beds?
Yeah, they do 5 to 6 months. Yeah.
I think they take the woman with the children. But another problem is the ethnicity, especially in a country like the United States. And when I first began this counseling business, I used to work at the East Harlem. And then the blacks hate Hispanics, Hispanics hate black, and they don't even stay in one room. They have different rooms. And of course, the black woman hates everybody. And the black man and the white man and the black woman. So there is really, you have to be very careful. Their needs are completely different. So this needs, if you don't know this little thing, you have to know how.
Or what we need to learn is that you can't isolate the problems. You don't step into a drug abuse program and the racism vanishes. You don't step into a battered, you know, a lot of battered women's shelter won't take you if you're on drugs, which I always thought made sense at one point. I mean, it does for people who are trying to, you know, make sure the house is safe and all of those things. But then I realized, like, what do you do if you're a battered woman who is addicted to something and has some other health problem? Where do you go when everything in your life is set up into boxes? You know,
what happens, this is funny, we have housing, we call that because housing is a big problem in our clients. They don't have homes, and they have been sharing everything all their life. We have a person here, the questionnaire, and ask the people what they really want, how they want to run this, we call clean house or sober housing project. And every group, every time they come, they have no idea, because all their life, they had never had their home. So it's just giving a lot of, you know, we are working on that. It takes months and months and months. First, they never liked the idea. They, so, and somebody wants the community, somebody wants it. Together, everybody has a different idea. It's very hard to make a common taste from that. Because they have never had anything. Somebody hates to share because they share everything all their life. So we're working on that questionnaire after questionnaire. Let's see what will come up.
Well, one of the things that I thought was very good is I think one of the secretaries, and actually our government said something about, that it's really about, not about rehabilitation, it's about habilitation.
Mm-hmm.
These people never experience these things.
I was going to say that, not to minimize, you know, the problem that these people face getting help and all these things really to happen, but I know a lot of people that work in, I know a few people that work in rehabs. I've been in a few of the rehabs in Smithers and Gracie Square, and they are really expensive to get into the drug program rehabs in Manhattan, and I know a lot of people that bring 12 step groups there and counselors that work there. They are, in my experience, really aware of the different, you know, problems, and that they know that almost all women will come in and will have had talks either with battering or sexual abuse as children, and they know, I mean, they know all these things. They don't quite compartmentalize them, but they do have a working awareness of it, and that is kind of like a current understanding of abuse. So I mean, I think there are places out there, of course, they're unbelievably expensive. I think to stay at Gracie Square for like 30 days is like $14,000 or something.
But average homeless person.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I guess there's some sort of selection process about the people who actually get in there. You have to, it's mostly people that are employed in certain jobs that they're able to get in. And then there's that also creates a problem in them being able to hit bottom, because frequently there's just like a lot of money being poured out, and these people don't really care about getting rid of their drug problem. They, you know, it's just something they have to do in order to keep their job, you know, to show up at. I mean, it's a really complicated problem. Everything everybody's talking about is true, but I just want to put out that there is, you know, it's not really completely unacknowledged.
No, there are, I mean, I learned a great deal from the Together for Cancer. I learned something that I think should really be illuminated, which is that incest survivor support groups at the rehabs are a matter of course. I thought it was how unusual. Oh, maybe we ought to illuminate that in the pamphlet. They said, don't bother. Every single place has it. It is a matter of course that we give incest survival support groups in all of our drug rehab programs. That's just...
I have a question. So I was thinking about what you said in the beginning about using some of these cases in order as a tool for local health care and whatnot. And I wanted to ask you sort of a specific legal question, which is if... In one of the cases, you mentioned that the judge said, you know, the woman should have done this and this and this, while there was no preconception, prenatal care, abortion. And I was thinking of the pitfall, if you were, could you ever argue, you know, an appeal or whatever, those things were not available for free, and the pitfall, and if you want to use it as an organizing tool to get those things, then the pitfall might be, if those things ever were, in our vision of society, available in some way. Addicted and,
right,
you know, chose then not to do it. That's sort of how you'd be caught between a rock and a hard place and making that kind of argumentation. So I wanted to ask you that.
It's a good question, because my opponents often raise that. They say, well, what if you have a woman who, you know, and treatment's available and all those things? And, you know, my answer is the same, which is, I mean, whether or not somebody takes advantage of those things, they ought to be available. And there are going to be people who do things that I don't like, that are a waste of their lives. You know, I don't know why we were created to be vulnerable to addiction problems and to prejudice and to all the things that are lousy, that seem to be as much a part of our culture as all of the good things about struggling for freedom and being healthy and taking care of other people. And so I'm willing to accept that there are going to be some people who won't take advantage of it. And that still doesn't mean that I then want to turn over and empower the state to decide what's best for those people. how is the state going to be able to make the decision that this person doesn't need to go through the struggle with alcoholism to get to someplace better in their lives? That doesn't then give you the right to have the state make those decisions. I've heard the other reasons as well. I don't want the state to be empowered to force women to go to a program where DES happens to be the new drug treatment, you know? So it's just, it's true that it's harder to argue because then you have to be willing to accept that you can't make people do the right thing. That's part of
what I was saying before, about purity.
Right, exactly.
It was getting too utopian.
That you can't make people do the right thing and that you don't want the government deciding for people what the right thing is. And I'm willing to live in a country or a society where people aren't necessarily healthy all the time and where they're making choices that I think are right.
So what you're saying is that you would like these centers to be available to people when they got ready to stop drinking or drugging or whatever. So, like, how do you intend to, like, we're working towards this goal, but like I don't really see where we're going with it. Like, how would we go about doing it once we leave this room?
I know, that's you know, such a good transition. And, you know, I had a sheet of what you can do, and I forgot to bring it. So first of all, if people want to put their names and addresses on here, I will send you the sheet so badly. But please print so I can. There are action things that you can do. First of all, some of you, I would really like your names because I think there are more potential lawsuits about getting the treatment that exists to not discriminate. You can lobby for non-discrimination clauses, for requiring non-discrimination among those programs that exist. You know, the ACT UP group just had a huge action in Albany and in Washington, you know, on a range of things. ACT UP has gotten it together to go picket to get drugs in this country to treat AIDS that weren't there. Where are we at the FDA around RU486 and drug treatment that's appropriate for pregnant women? I actually thought, there is a group now that's formed that's starting to develop action. It's called WAMP, Women's Health Action and Mobilization. That's one group to contact. I actually wanted to form an ACT UP to have a group that really looked at women's issues and abortion rights that was the equivalent. And I was sitting there and I was making this impassioned plea, and all of a sudden it struck me what the name of it should be, and it was Knocked Up. Actually, somebody came up with the acronym. It would be spelled N-O-C-T-U-P. It would be N-N-O-C-T, National Network of Citizens Concerned with Uterine Privacy. But joining WAM, being involved in the legislature at any moment could be on the verge of proposing legislation, and I think in Westchester somebody's working on legislation for mandatory reporting and criminalization, making sure that you write letters to your legislators saying don't do this, and more than that saying I want to see money going to women's programs, working on reproductive rights, any part of the reproductive rights agenda, any part of the feminist agenda, but reproductive rights, because it's all connected. This stuff is happening in large part because of the anti-choice movement. Education, you know, doing things like this as well. Do you have positive suggestions?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the lawsuit where the infant sues the mother because mom made me an addict. I mean, I can see that as a repercussion to some of the issues that you brought up. So if I have reproductive rights, if I have right of choice, then the child has right of choice. If the child is forced to be born an addict, be forced to be born brain damaged, so in the name of the child sues the mother for forcing them to do something. They had no choice.
Right, but that's a point of view that, again, is why I oppose. And I think we all should any of these actions. There, in fact, was a case in Illinois, Stallman v. Youngquist, where a woman was driving a car, got into a car accident, the baby was born with injuries, somebody sued on her behalf. And fortunately, the Supreme Court of Illinois said, no way. They said, we will not create the legal fiction. You said babies have rights, women have rights.
No, this is hypothesis. I don't support this, but I can just see that as a repercussion.
Yes,
saying
exactly.
The mother has rights? Okay, so now these babies are going to start suing their moms.
And the court fortunately said, we will not adopt the legal fiction that woman and fetus are separate. we will not create pregnancy, we will not turn pregnancy into a hostile relationship with the mother and the fetus. The court said if we start here, where will we draw the line? You know, everything a pregnant woman does has some effect on the fetus. And they recognize what pregnancy is, that you cannot guarantee, no woman can guarantee that she's going to give birth to a perfect baby. And that this notion that we can guarantee that by threatening pregnant women, either with lawsuits or prosecution, is part, perhaps, of that whole eugenics history, that notion that you can create perfection by controlling other people. And the court just said, no way. But another court in Michigan did allow somebody to sue on behalf of a baby that was born with serious damage to its teeth because the mother took tetracycline during her pregnancy. Oh. Such a crime, right? You know, should all of you who are DES daughters try to sue your moms? A lot of these kids, the sad thing that doesn't come out is that a lot of these cases are brought, I think, not because there's some ideology behind it, but because there's some insurance thing, and the only way to get coverage for care for the problems is to do it as a lawsuit.
The other thing for this young lady, that if you can, if you, first of all, you have to educate yourself, read about Bob Candy and the other editions that have to the people.
I know about Shogun.
Okay, and second step, if you can volunteer your time, one of these places.
I volunteer my time at this place.
Okay, that's
good. I'm interested in it, you know. Yeah. What I'm saying is that I want to take this further. That's why I asked her the question. You know, I want to see that there are places for women who can't afford drug treatment, because I know for a fact that in order for a woman to go into a decent drug treatment program, she has to have GHI insurance, or she can't even have Blue Cross Blue Shield. If she has Blue Cross Blue Shield, they turn her away.
There are places, but you know, you have to work on that, make a list, and make the people up. They know about that. There are places, but the other problem is quality of the place. Some places are complete enabling places that they don't help
anymore.
So it's just a lot of
things. Well, and also, you know, the places that you speak of and that you speak of are mainly in Manhattan. If you live in any outlying borough.
There are places
in
Queens. There's one in Queens.
Yeah, but you said one.
There's eight places.
I know.
Yeah, okay.
There aren't that many places in Queens.
It's hard
to get for women to get in here. Can you imagine how hard it is for women to get in Queens?
What's happening with those lawsuits? I mean, what's going to happen with the kind of work you're doing?
Well, the criminal cases.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the problem with them is that they're very individualized. You get a case here, you get a case there. You know, we're fighting desperately in Florida, but they're now like that was the first real victory anywhere in the country for the bad guys. And there are now 5 more cases in Florida, and there are several in. Ones in Massachusetts and Michigan are based on the drug trafficking theory. It works somewhere, so they're doing it. So I keep thinking that if enough people, if the medical groups finally come out against this, which they haven't. By the way, I mean, it is time to start picketing the AMA.
Right.
The AMA will not come out clearly in favor of abortion. They are not yet, they have been talking about a maternal fetal policy that protects the woman, and they still aren't coming out, but they're becoming a very regressive force in this country. That we need to be putting pressure on medical groups to start taking a stand against this, since unfortunately they are so respected, as well as getting our own voices heard. You know, one of the things I've done wrong today is, you know, AIDS doesn't let a panel on, I mean, ACT UP doesn't let a panel on AIDS happen without having a person with AIDS on the panel or trying to have a person with AIDS. We ought to be hearing from some of these women talking about their lives. This is, you know, we need to be getting them to testify before Congress. We need to, and what I try to do with each of these litigations is to make it into an organizing opportunity and to bring in groups. And in fact, each of these cases, in Johnson, we got the American Public Health Association and a bunch of medical groups that hadn't come out before with a statement against this to write an amicus brief. So we use each case to get these folks on record, although the court didn't accept the amicus brief. They're still on record.
I have a question. Do you have any idea that is there in the law now the whoever is having babies and they tested for crack, is there in the law?
Which?
Whenever people are having babies now.
Yeah, New York, I think New York and other places routinely test it. There's a whole area I didn't even touch on, which is these babies are automatically taken away They're put into foster care. The foster care people may well be addicts themselves who are doing foster care to raise money. Nobody's getting them into treatment. It's a whole other nightmare. And that's, again, another area to start looking at, protesting against the automatic removal of babies, the reliance on a single positive toxicology that only tells you the woman used drugs in the previous 72 hours. It's all it tells you. It doesn't tell you whether she's a good parent, a bad parent, anything else. And changing the family law, family court practices, pick up the family court, find the judges who are, find the judges who are coming down, especially out in Nassau County, with horrifying decisions where they took away a baby from a woman who had not had been a drug addict, was clean, got pregnant, smoked two or three joints during delivery, baby was out.
They are terrified. They are terrified. They're so angry, nobody can help them.
I was just going to share that there's been some research, just a little, being done on AA and the other programs and why they work or not and who they work with. To the extent that there's any take on this, and it's obviously a hard thing to research, it appears that the people that end up the prototype of the successful AA recovered person is somebody that had something to lose when the going gets rough. Any of us that have ever been addicted or are close to people who have, know, you know, it's a pretty rough process, and that there's got to be something there, some reward there to some degree that will allow, you know, support getting through the rough moments. And in my own sort of exploration of this stuff, I have come to this conclusion that if we ever deal with these problems apart from questions of political mobilization, power in communities, and access to resources, we are going to be hopelessly lost. Because if we don't do it with that connection, because really, I think addicts are very smart and very aware of what's up. And when somebody says to me, you know, I want you to go through hell, and I want you to go and feel like everyone's saying, go here and do that, and then when you're done, you're still going to have zilch. It is a very rational move to do the drug, to numb it. And I hope that we don't assume that our only options are to either say coercive criminalization on one extreme or moral relativism, I can't make you be who I want you to be, on the other extreme, as opposed to let's figure out how all of us have the kind of power in our lives and access to resources. And it's not so general, but I just hope that this anti-addiction movement that any of us are involved with continues to look back at the question of class, control, power.
Or at least looks back at the personal. Because what's happening in the programs that I see, that, you know, and what I see through the National Black Women's Health Project is, we're not talking about moral relativism, we're not talking about imposing a particular point of view, we're not talking about ignoring all of the things that affect people's lives, like poverty and racism and prejudice. But that people don't have a place where they have an opportunity to know even what's going on for themselves. Because we just aren't given that room to talk about what it feels like, whether it's being addicted or having to work in the kind of environments we work in. I want to end, first, saying one thing and then trying something out to you. Just that I read a book about drug treatment programs for women written by some men who run a program in New York City for a long time. And they pointed out that when the government began to fund drug abuse treatment programs, they acted as if there were no women addicts at all, pregnant or not. And in the book, they said something that I found amazing. They said, you know, in the 70s, we started to get some programs because of the feminist movement. What are we going to do now? And they were saying that they were acknowledging that the feminist movement as a large movement that could push for these things wasn't as strong in their perception as it was then. They weren't saying there is no feminist movement. But they placed it right in our laps, saying, we're the people who made the difference in the 70s. Please come back and help in the 90s.
So I think what's scary, too, is that taking it out of our lap, the academic literature on drug treatment, after somebody reviewing the big manuscript on different pages, it's coming out in about 3 months. Anyway, it evaluates all the research, everything that we know about what works and why it works. And if there's gender differentials in drug treatment, it doesn't matter. There's no gender-specific need. That's the academic consensus. has to say.
We've always had
that. But we don't have the special need.
Can we, just as a closure thing, go around the room and just say one word that you're thinking has come to you in terms of feeling about what you've heard today? So,
just one word?
Help.
Overwhelming. Urgency.
Angry.
Scary.
Scapegoat. Control.
Mortality.
Choice.
Frustration.
Urgency.
Double frustrated.
Thank you.
Rage.
Depressed.
Hopeful.
Desperate.
Challenged.
Connection.
Say a word about what you feel about what's been happening here.
What are you here about?
Just one word that you to describe what you're feeling as a result of what you've been hearing.
It's very excellent. I'm very highly motivated.
Thank you.
I say need the one relationship. Outrage.
More curiosity.
Frustration.
All of them. Resource.